Located in the beautiful Ozark Mountains in the heartland of America is the Christian Revival Center. We hope that this Word of Truth services will mean much to you and your family. And if you enjoy this message, we encourage you to share it with your loved ones. And now, we hope that you enjoy today's program.
Good. I was worried my pen would be gone when I got up here. All right. Well, I enjoyed hearing the update on the Stormfront conference, and I agree with what Freeland ascertained about it. It kind of is the end of, let me move this, kind of the end of an era in the respect that, as he pointed out, you know, especially like you consider all these documents and past newsletters and stuff going back 100 years that we have back here in the back from that library we got, people have been warning and warning and warning and warning for years. And, you know, the nights, you know, we warned with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of rallies, and, you know, Pastor Rob's been back and forth across the nation, and J.B. Stoner and Willis Cardo and Don Black and David Duke and Paul Fromm and just numerous men and women that have canvassed the country warning. And I was up at Kinko's yesterday in Springfield, Shelby and I, and we were blowing up some copies of old white patriots and crusaders going back, you know, 25, 30 years ago. And one of the headlines said, this was right after desegregation and order was lifted, and it said integration of the schools is white genocide for America. And then another headline said something like genocide to happen soon, whites to become the new minority, all these type of things. And all of these things have already come to pass. And so it's important that we recognize that that kind of is an end of an era as far as the warning, and which is why this ministry, the Knights, and other people that have gotten on board with this school recognize that there is an end of the era, and the new game plan, the new era is getting people ready for the new nation. Like Pastor Rob pointed out a few months ago that the country and the political institution, the republic, is already dead. Now we're facing a multiracial, anti-white, anti-Christian American empire, and our job and duty now is to groom future leaders for this new nation that God is going to carve out of the country and instill with his own white sons and daughters, those who have seen the writing on the wall and have dedicated their life to securing a future not only for their children but also for Christianity and future generations and the Christian and godly way of life that we were meant to live and instill in the hearts of our children on down through the eons. So it is an end of an era, and I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think it's just that's the way it is, and we have to be ready and persevere and work extra hard. And we have a lot of obstacles and hurdles to go over, but I think that we're in the best situation and position that our people have ever been in, because we now know what is happening, we know what has happened, and we are now in a position to begin taking these men and women who have hearkened to the warning and hearkened to the call and appeal of others to pay attention to what's happening to their race. And these men and women are wanting to prepare and live their life and raise their families and work in their communities to be a part of a new nation and to help fulfill that promise that God gave to Israel for a new government and a new nation in the top and cornerstone of Mount Zion, as Pastor Rob has pointed out before. And so I think that's very important. I appreciate the update, Freeland. Part of building that new nation, part of helping our people become more aware of not necessarily what is happening in society, but what needs to happen from here on out, is the due diligence and the aspect of our own personal lives that we have to work out, that we have to figure out in our own personal lives what part that we're going to play in this nation building. I also like to kind of look at it similarly, kind of like we're building a new colony. When the pilgrims came here to this land, what they did was they built a new colony. And white people are historical colony builders. And I think it's very refreshing that at the same moment that we see this massive integration and massive influx of non-whites into this nation, that we also see it as really the ground force of a mighty new, you know, just something the world has never seen before. It's just something really exciting, and we're able to be in on the ground floor of that. And I think it is very exciting, and it is very refreshing to know that we are at a new dawn, that we are at the cusp of something very real, very tangible, and very exciting. And we have to decide what we're going to do in our own personal lives. And I always kind of like to relate it like this to the kids when they were growing up, that we don't want to give God our leftovers. Many people here are familiar with the song, I Surrender All. I'm not going to sing it. My dad gets up and he'll sing up here. He's got a lot better voice than I do, but everyone's familiar with the song, I Surrender All. And it is a nice song. It's a beautiful song. But sometimes it kind of irritates me, to be frank, because the whole concept, and I understand the way it's supposed to be projected, but the whole concept of surrendering our all to Christ, while very noble and very important, I fear that a lot of times people, they surrender their lives to Christ, and they almost do it in a kind of a defeatist type attitude. The definition of surrender, which the word surrender doesn't actually, it's not actually in the Bible, but the word surrender means to cease resistance to an enemy or opponent and submit to their authority. Well, Christ is not our enemy or our opponent. It also means to give up or hand over a person, right, or possession, typically on compulsion or demand. Well, we could look at it from that standpoint. We could say, okay, we're going to surrender our life. We're going to surrender our homes, our families, our blood, our sweat, our toil, our resources, everything we have, our personal body, everything we have, we're going to surrender to God. But it's not on compulsion or demand. So I really don't, you know, like that word or the way that it's phrased many times. Surrender can mean to lose. If you're in a combat type situation with another enemy army, or you're in a sporting competition and you surrender, then you're giving up something very important to yourself on compulsion, on demand, to someone else. And so I recognize the phraseology of surrendering our life to Christ. But too often I think that in this last church age, that when people think about surrendering to God, they look at it from a defeatist type attitude, that, well, I've surrendered everything to God, and now the fun days are over, and the fun's ended, and the party's over, and there's nothing left to do now but to surrender to God and walk around looking mournful and somewhat kind of sad and self-righteous because now we're a good Christian, you know. I like to think about surrendering our life to Christ from a different standpoint of becoming a volunteer for Christ, becoming a warrior for Christ, of becoming a soldier for Christ. And that's the difference between being a volunteer in the army of God or being a mercenary. We're not mercenaries. Nobody gets rich off of speaking for White Christian Revival. I didn't see anyone coming out today from the Today Show and saying, hey, Pastor Rob or Jason or Freeland or Billy or Tom or anybody here, Here's your National Congressional Award of Freedom, of Honor. Here's your commendation by the President or by Congress. Here's all these awards and accolades. Nobody's getting anything like that. Nobody's getting that type of recognition. Nobody's getting rich. Nobody's becoming famous. Nobody's really getting anything out of it at all, other than the personal satisfaction of knowing that you're on the side of righteousness and you're on the side of solutions, that you are on the side of choosing a more nobler and better path. And so being a mercenary and kind of surrendering, to me, kind of like, seems like it kind of goes hand in hand. And there's a lot of people that they become very fanatical in this movement. And a fanatic is someone, let me get the right definition here. Dictionary definition, which would be better than what I would just explain to you. I can find it here on my notes. A fanatic, according to the dictionary, is someone who is blind, uncontrolled, and has an exaggerated zeal for something. We don't want to be fanatics. A lot of times we say we need to have a fanatical interest or a fanatical drive for this movement that we're in. But really, when we understand that the Bible and this fight that we're in is about balance, then we understand that we don't want to be fanatical, because then you might get into the mindset of being a mercenary. You might get into the mindset of being pigeonholed in one line and direction of thinking. Being in this movement really is a difference between being fanatical and being dedicated and zealous. I've known many people throughout growing up in the movement that I would esteem to be fanatics, and they were so fanatical in their day-to-day activities of working for the cause that they lost sight of their families, they lost sight of their children, they lost sight of everything else. Anything that you do too much without balance is going to cause you to be blind, uncontrolled, and exaggerated in all of your dealings. And so it's important that we're not fanatical in the sense of, okay, Christ, I'm giving my life to you, I'm going to do everything I can to for this cause, I'm going to shout it from the rooftops, I'm going to talk to my friends and neighbors, and so on and so forth. But at the same time, you're so directed on one path, you're so far-sighted that you actually become short-sighted to the everyday needs and realities of what God has called you to do in your life, whether that's a good parent, a good spouse, a good son, a good daughter, a good employer, a good employee. And so we have to have that balance in our life. And it's important when we consider just what, you know, some might consider mundane activities, how important that balance in our life is to building a new nation. Because our founding fathers, when we looked at all the work that they went through in building a new nation, they still had their families, they still had their occupations, they still had their careers that they dealt with, that they took care of. They recognized that they were stewards of the families, they were stewards of the government, they were stewards of the land. And so they realized that they had to have good balance, they had to be good stewards of everything that was entrusted to them. If all George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and these different ones, if all they did was sit around 24/7 and talked about ways to get the British, they would never have gotten the British. They would have never gotten one up on them, because their families would have fallen apart, their communities would have fallen apart. It would have been an example of, you know, do what I say and not what I do. And so I think we can look to our founders of this nation for some excellent examples of how we can go forth and build this new nation. And it takes personal sacrifice, but it always also takes balance. It also takes good stewardship. It takes putting our families first. It takes a lot of things that is really just, you know, plain and simple, a lot of hard work. And that is one thing that I feel is very important as we embark on this new path for our people and for our nation. Matthew 22:37-38 says, "Ye shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And this is the first and greatest commandment." And of course, it goes on to say that the second is like unto the first. We must love our people. How many times have we taken that into our heart, and especially those in this movement, or like Pastor Rob mentioned, we don't really like the term movement, but this crusade or this undertaking that God has placed upon his people. How many times have we looked at that and we think, well, we love God, we've surrendered everything, we're giving it all, we're tired, we're down, we just work, nobody thanks us, this and that, and we, you know, get into a pity party and everything, and then we stop and we think about the second part about, well, we're, you know, we're being good friends, we're being good neighbors, so on and so forth. We're out there spreading the word again. We're loving our race, loving our culture, and so on. But then we go and we forget again about the balance part. Our family. Our family has to take prominent position in our life always, first and foremost. Because the new nation that we're building, and it was interesting when we were going, Shelby and I were going through a lot of papers and stuff yesterday. And it wasn't just papers of ours, but there were newsletters from scores of different organizations and church groups and ministries and patriotic things and anti-communist organizations and anti-UN organizations, just a huge number of sources of patriotic right-wing type publications. And I thought it was interesting because time in and again, over and over in these newsletters, it always, well, let me sum it up like this. On the back, which we thought was funny, we chuckled, on the back of one of the newspapers was a picture. This is from, I'm going to say, maybe 1978, 79. And there was a picture of a nice buxom blonde in a bikini on the back of the paper. And if I can remember the caption right, it said something, there's a guy standing there with a white power t-shirt on, and the saying was, "I just love the man who wears a white power t-shirt." And I was just, you know, there's this guy here with the big muscles, and he's, you know, his muscles are straining out of the t-shirt, and there's a big white power thing, and the girl looks like, I don't know, like a Daisy Duke from Dog, I don't know if anyone knows what Dog Patch was, theme park around here with the buxom blonde Little Miss Daisy May, or was that Daisy May, I think it was. So she's got this little polka dotted bikini on, and she's all like rubbing up on this guy and says, "I just love a guy in a white power t-shirt." And I just, it was funny.
I have that problem.
Yeah. Have that problem a lot. But anyway, but it was funny because, you know, it wasn't that anyone was trying to, I don't think they were doing anything intentional, but everything was like being directed towards, and the men of America must save America, and if you're a real man, then you'll join the Klan. If you're really macho, you'll do this, and on and on and on. And it's all very true. I don't disagree with it, you know, at all. And there's, you know, all the picture, you know, various pictures throughout different magazines. There's always a cute blonde there, and, you know, and the real man's got a some whatever the t-shirt on that, you know, was trying to be sold at the time. And it was funny to me, but on the same token, kind of sad, because I think people at that period of time really overlooked the potential of the family. And we understand the man being the head of the house and having the ultimate responsibility for his family and the care and protection, even the emotional, intellectual development of the family and the children, their spiritual grounding and so forth. But that, if we did, I mean, I feel sorry for the guys. If we just hold them accountable for everything and we're just like, well, we're going to go off to the mall and leave the guy to handle it all, And I think that might have been the attitude. So I don't necessarily blame the people that put out, you know, these articles and left the women out and everything. But it's important that we understand that this isn't a male or female issue. When we're surrendering our life to Christ, when we're getting on the right page with God, when we're looking at carving out a new nation, what we are looking at is the development of families. And the development of families takes a lot of darn hard work. And it's crucial that we understand that the new nation that we are building is not being built by women, it's not being built by men, it's being built by families. That is the difference between the old era and the new era. I think and feel, and I believe a lot of people can agree, that we see a new current surging forth in the white Christian nationalist community of prominence being given to the development of families, because it is so important. Abraham Lincoln said that the ideas or concepts of the schoolroom in one generation becomes the concepts and prevailing rule of thought in the next generation. And whatever your opinion of Abraham Lincoln is, what he said is very true. When we are wanting to build this new nation, when we are wanting to be examples to our families and our children, our wives and husbands and so forth, of not being a fanatic who's just driven towards this, you know, white power or utopia that we have so often thought up in our own mind, when we really understand what it is that we're doing, we're going to place greater emphasis on families. And not just on saving the family, but the family as a tool. The family is a tool of white Christian revolution in this country, because it is out of the family and out of our personal dedication and the dedication that we bestow upon our children by our everyday example that we are going to win. Now, one of the things that I think is very important is the fact that we recognize that these end days that we are in, far from being doom and gloom, are actually, I feel, very, very exciting, very encouraging. The Bible mentions in Revelations about Megiddo, it talks about the enemy coming into the Valley of Jehoshaphat, which means a valley of judgment. And I talked about this in another sermon another time, so I'm not going to get into it too deeply today. But when we see this era of warning that has passed, and now we are in a true racially mongrelized mixed nation, and we see this new nation being carved out of it, and yet we stop in our own human reasoning and faculties wonder, how can we ever be delivered out of the bondage that we're in? Even if we've got the right balance, even if we aren't mercenaries but we're volunteers, even if we recognize that we need to really put some prominence and position on the family and be really good stewards in that regard, it still sometimes just looks like it's, you know, just the case is over, it's closed. And, you know, we're going to put up a good try, but, you know, our reward might just be in heaven and we're never going to realize any success here on earth. But it's always refreshing to me to go back and read about Megiddo, because basically what that is when you look at the Bible, to me it's very comforting to understand that everything that is prophesied and plays out in the Bible always ends up happening. And the Bible said that the aliens would come in like a flood as judgment upon his sons and daughters, and that is happening. But it also talks about the Battle of Megiddo and Armageddon. And what that literally means are that the multiracial, and I wish I had the time to go into it here, but the multiracial hordes that have poured into the land of God's people are being brought for judgment, but they're also being brought for destruction. Because what better way to secure the existence of our people than the fact that in God's timely wisdom, He is gathering up those who hate us to bring them for us, because the Bible says they will bow at their feet and they will submit and they will recognize the authority of the sons and daughters of God. They will recognize the authority of God's family and the righteousness of his laws and judgment. And so from a tactical standpoint, you know, it makes it a lot easier when you're trying to whip the enemy that you don't have to go out and hunt them down, because God's bringing them to us and placing them at the footstool right in front of us. And so I think that is very positive and enlightening for us to recall that, because it gives us, I think it gives us a lot of satisfaction and hope and encouragement to know that the struggles that we go through every day of the week with jobs and our occupations and our businesses, our families, everything that we, the tribulations that we personally go through, and the tribulation that we see our brothers and sisters in our nation go through, I think to know that there is that new dawn, there is that, you know, silver lining, if you will. There is a reason and a cause, and there is something better at the end of the rainbow. I doubt that there's a little pot of gold there. It would be nice. We could all use that. But to know that the strategy that God has of both, you know, the balance is, to me, is just inconceivable, that we have the enemy coming in and persecuting our people, creating a genocidal type condition in this nation, creating such harmful societal woes that our families and children have to suffer through. Hopefully through our wife stewardship are able to rise above and persevere. And at the same token, the tools that God uses for the judgment of our people is also, at the same time, they're being brought to their own destruction. And so, you know, every time, you know, I've been here lately, I've been trying to think, you know, when I see the news flash and another illegal alien just crossed the border or got dropped off at Kennedy Airport or some crazy Muslim guys out, you know, shouting about the, you know, the end of God and the Allah will reign supreme and all this type of nonsense. Every time Abe Foxman puts out some more, you know, crazy writings or speeches about how we have to, you know, destroy this evil system of white privilege in the country, every time I see these things happening, I just think, you know, all right, go ahead and bring it on. Come on in, because I don't have to go and hunt you down. God's bringing you to our doorstep. And so when we're making and carving out a new nation and we're putting that prominence and importance upon our family in that building of a nation, I think it should give people here a lot of comfort to know that God is bringing our enemies to us just as he is using them as judgment against those who haven't quite caught the light yet. They don't quite understand why they shouldn't race mix. They don't understand why they should get their kids out of integrated schools. They don't understand a lot of these things. So there's a little bit of warning that still needs to go on as to why these things are destructive. But just to know and to have that encouragement that God loves us so much that when we give our life to him and we volunteer our life to him, and we look at it from being good stewards and from being good, compassionate friends to our white brothers and sisters, that at the same time, from a very strategical standpoint, our nation building is moving forward. It's all working out great. We don't want to give God the leftovers of our lives. We want to teach our children to give, you know, if we're inviting someone to dinner, we don't just tell them to go eat the scraps. We want to give them the fine china. We want to give them the best place in the house and the best seat. We want to give them our full attention. And so if we can do that with Christ and do it not from a wearisome, depressing type attitude, like, oh, woe is me, I work so hard, on and on, nobody cares, wham, wham, boo-hoo. If we just look at it from the standpoint that, hey, we've got to fight on. It's work. We got to, you know, put on the combat boots and get out there and work hard and be diligent and give Christ the utmost honor and the right place in our life. That's going to carry through to our children and our families. And this new nation that we are building is going to be exactly what God described. It's going to be a place where people can come in and out of Zion to learn the wisdom of Him and learn the wisdom of His laws and learn the wisdom of the right place in society for all people and all things. So I will close with that, and let me go ahead and ask everyone to bow for a word of prayer. I want to thank you, Heavenly Father, for an opportunity to come today and speak with my white brothers and sisters. I thank you for the work that we are able to do. I thank you for the love and companionship that we have among our members of the church here and the members of our online church, and just all those men and women that we come into contact on a daily basis, who we can share our innermost feelings and hurts and desires for this cause and for our people and for the fight that we are in. I'm just so grateful that you have surrounded us with so many fine gentlemen and ladies who care first and foremost about your will and then care second most about their own lives. I just thank you that you are giving us a vision for the future, that you are giving us a work to be done, and that you are giving us the courage and the strength to continue to focus on the important things in life and on your will. And I thank you in your holy and precious name, Jesus Christ.
Thank you for listening to this timely message brought to you by the Christian Revival Center. Pastor Thomas Robb and associates are dedicated to bringing a message of white Christian revival to our lost brothers and sisters, the Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, Germanic, and related people who constitute the lost tribes of Israel. For more information, you can write to us at the Christian Revival Center, Post Office Box 354, Bergman, Arkansas 72615. You can email us at revival@southshore.com. And be sure to watch our weekly broadcast at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time at thechristianrevivalcenter.net. That is www.christianrevivalcenter.net. You can also watch live at www.sotctv.com. Please ask for your sample copy of our quarterly magazine called The Torch, and ask to be put on our mailing list for our bi-monthly newsletter, also titled by the same name. We want to thank you for listening to this special program. These programs and this ministry and our many events are supported by your free will, love offerings, and your tithes. Again, if you felt that this message was important, if you felt that this message did something for you, if you agree that this message had an important lesson that needs to be listened to by others, we encourage you to pass this disc on to your loved ones. Our people are facing a global genocide. Our people are facing tyranny. Our people are facing destruction. We urge you to support this ministry. We urge you to support the message of white Christian revival. And we ask that you follow the biblical injunctions to love your God and love your people. Thank you for listening.